Comics Coffee Metal Podcast, episode 112.
Greetings and welcome to the Comics Coffee Metal Podcast. I am your host, Don Cardenas, and today we're doing things a little bit differently. As I've mentioned in previous episodes, I'm kind of under the gun myself with a bunch of deadlines, and getting some recommendations out and stuff to everybody has been kind of tricky. I usually record that separately from the interviews, but today I'm gonna change it up a bit. I'm gonna talk to my guest about those recommendations I have, because I also think they would dig them as well. That's how we're gonna roll. That's how we're gonna roll for today. Hopefully it works out. But I'm super excited to have my guest back. He's here for the third time. You're my second third turning guest, I believe.
Oh, wow.
And you are also, not to put too much pressure on you, my highest listened to episode.
Wow.
Your second appearance was my high. So I don't know if we'll do a few hundred like this one, like the previous one.
Awesome, man.
At some point, Tyrell Fever got swept the nation, and it just pulled some pretty good numbers for me.
Nice.
But yeah, if you can't guess already, my guest today, the amazing Tyrell Cannon. Tyrell, thank you for coming back on.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be back, Don. Thank you so much for having me.
I think we missed a year, because otherwise you've been on every year.
An annual thing. We should just pencil one in for next year.
That's the best thing about the show is, you know, obviously talking to new people and getting to know people I know a little bit better, and having more conversations, more casual kind of conversations and things like that. But it's also kind of nice to have a real good reason to check in with people. Like, hey, why don't you come on the show? And we can just kind of, because even though, you live in Chicago, I live in north of Chicago and all that. We see each other, occasionally at shows or something. It's
right.
Never like the best time to sit down and have a chat.
It really isn't. Always, it's fun always, to see people at shows, but you're always left sort of wanting,
Yeah, it's always ships passing in the night. So, and you were going to be on, I believe, last year, but I remembered that, the other half of Beef Bros had not been on, and Aubrey Citizen, the writer of Beef Bros, was also one of my most requested people to have on the show. So I think that he stole your slot. That's
okay. I'm happy to share with Aubrey.
we'll have to make sure, especially if you keep coming out with just new, different, and exciting projects such as The Schlub, which we'll be talking about later. Really excited about this. You sent me a preview to check out, and I really, really enjoyed it. I had no doubts I would, but it was definitely a really fun first issue, and I can't wait to dive into a bit more of that. But we got to do it. We got to go as the show goes. Tyrell, Comics Coffee Metal, what are you digging right now?
Maybe I should start with the easy one, which is coffee. I'll tell you, Don, I feel like every time I come on the show, my coffee situation has downgraded.
Because
now I'm basically like Kroger, Cameron's, whatever like the second cheapest coffee brand is, that's what I'm getting. And so it's been, kind of a survival mode for coffee. But I will say, when I go out now, like if I'm at a coffee shop, I'm much more likely now to order like a nice fancy, a macchiato or a cappuccino, get something a little bit nicer out. But at home, I'm pretty boring. My only nice hookup is I do have a friend who works at Metropolis in their distribution now. And so he'll occasionally give me some great beans.
Nice.
And so that's nice. But my coffee game's pretty boring. What about your coffee game right now?
Well, you know what? I haven't tried Metropolis. They've been on my try list for a while, because they're fairly local, aren't they? Aren't they a Chicago roaster?
Yeah, they're Chicago roaster for sure.
Because I really like Two Brothers. They're a Chicago roaster.
Yeah, Two Brothers is great.
I really like, there's one near us called Snowdrift.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
They recently had for Pride Month, they had a Pride blend.
Oh, nice.
And it was a very, very bright, citrusy type of coffee.
Okay.
Not normally my favorite, but it was really, really good. Nice. My wife absolutely loved it, so I made sure we got an extra bag before the month ended. Hopefully it returns next year or they bring it back in some other fashion. But that was really good. You mentioned Cameron's, and I think I tried one of those things before, but I think it might have been like one of the flavored coffees, and I didn't really dig it. But I don't like a flavored coffee anyway. I'll drink a flavored coffee, but
my wife doesn't, and so that means we don't get flavored coffee.
So, you know, my coffee game, you know, it's pretty much been the same. You know, we daily drive some Brutalist Damn Fine.
Nice.
And then, you know, I have it timed out now, so it's we get a 5-pound bag that lasts us about almost 2 months, and then after that runs out, before I get the next big bag, I have time to like try a couple different ones or return to some ones we've tried and really liked. I've been going back to Snowdrift, again, the Two Brothers, the Sweet Home Chicago blend I really like. There was one called Black and Bold Rise and Grind. That was a really good good one. What else? And just, yeah, nice. that's kind of where we're at with the coffee game. So I think, you know, if you're listening, like Chicago Roasters, man, they got some good stuff happening here.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure. Absolutely. I guess metal, I always go back to my favorites, but I always try to get new things. Right now I'm on a serious Zayo binge. Do you ever listen to Zayo?
Oh, I know that name.
So they released an album a couple of years ago called The Crimson Corridor, which I think our mutual friend Brian made me aware of it, Brian Level. And I was like, oh, Zayo, I love Zayo. Like when I was a lot younger, I was super into them. And then there was like years that I didn't really know what they were up to. And that record, Crimson Corridor, really blew me away. It's a fantastic record. And so I also listened to the one they did right before that called A Well-Intentioned Virus. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I'm just going to go through their whole catalog because I just got a Spotify membership. I'm like, I'm going to start at the very beginning and I'm going to listen my way through their whole catalog. And man, oh man, all their albums are great, but there's three or four that I just cannot stop listening to. And so those two, and then there's another one called The Fear is What Keeps Us Here. And it's recorded with Steve Albini, and it's really incredible, amazing sound. A lot of Zayo lately, a lot of Blood Incantation. I really dig Blood Incantation. I just bought a Blood Incantation t-shirt. It's on its way. Nice. I'm excited to see what they do next. I didn't love their ambient thing was pretty cool, but I would much rather hear the metal stuff. I have to tell you, I really have been consistently, you know, every like maybe once a month, I'll spin the new Megadeth. I really dug the newest record, the guitars and the drums especially. What did you think of it?
I'm jokingly, if you haven't listened to an interview with Tyrell and myself before, I'm Metallica, he's Megadeth. It is what it is. It was pretty good. I mean, I've never doubted I've never like been against their musicianship,
right?
Or their riff writing and songwriting. It's just always Dave's vocals were always that barrier. Sure. But now that he's older and it's not as super whiny and nasal, and it's just more kind of like it's definitely and I'm sure my ears have definitely attuned to more a wide variety of voices now too. It's a lot more palatable for me. So but I do agree that latest album was good. It was good.
It's good. And like his voice now, he's got that sort of burned out voice and it kind of works. It like even on that first track, he's like, it sounds so cool to hear his snarl in like a 60-year-old man's voice, you know?
Yeah. It's especially for thrash, voice doesn't have to be at its best, which it is kind of funny though. Cause like someone like a band like Megadeth, which, you know, arguably the second biggest thrash band in the world, ever. Actually, and like you can tell like Dave's voice isn't there yet or isn't there anymore wherever it was in with or whatever. I'm pretty sure there was an area like in the 90s and all that where it was probably at its peak, because there's a lot of the stuff, even though he has that like more nasal whiny,
right?
I'm not one to talk about nasal voices, but you know but at least there was I could tell there's still more behind it. And it's kind of funny because then I hear the new Metallica album, and you know, like his voice or not, you know, James is sounding as good as he ever did. mm-hmm. on that album. But then I hear like New Testament and Chuck Billy on those albums are like, he's instead of like, you know, getting like, oh, you know, he's losing some power or whatever, he's just gotten mm-hmm. more and more just aggressive and deep and dark. And it's just like, it's crazy to see how these thrash guys, where they started.
Right, right. Yeah, it's been a cool evolution to watch, especially in the vocal department. You know, yeah. I feel like there's just such an evolution that naturally happens. And I don't know, man. I get what you're saying. I think when I first got into like metal and was listening to Megadeth, I didn't understand, or listening to Metallica, you know, was my yeah. first kind of, you know, metal record I bought was Metallica. And when I heard Megadeth, I was like, well, this rules, but can they get a new singer? You know? And then over the yeah. years, I sort of grew to feel almost the opposite way about the two vocalists mm-hmm. where I feel like there's something so weird about Dave's voice. That's very cool. But I guess, you know, that's the other, I guess my last kind of, I'll mention one more metal that because of the vocals is the new Cattle Decapitation record is rips so hard. And their vocalist is, man, he is so cool. He has so many different things that he's doing. And then yeah. of course, I mean the whole band, the drummer, especially, they're just off the chain. Really great record.
My buddy and also awesome artist Brian Churla, he loves Cattle Decapitation. Oh, yeah. He's always sending me like clips and stuff of them and all that. And so as soon as they have a new thing, I'm always getting a link or something. And it's not my, like, I like plenty of death metal and things like that sure. now. And it's not 100%. I think it's very technical at points. And right. I don't mind that. I appreciate technicality. But for me, a lot of it kind of just comes across as like, I don't know, just it doesn't like connect with me as much as sure, something sure. that's probably more mood or vibe based.
Right. Right.
But
it's definitely, no, I would never say Cattle Decap. I say one of the best ways to describe it is probably not for everybody. You know, no, like not only just the musicianship, but even like the themes in their music they're a little much, I think, sometimes.
Yeah. Oh yeah, 100%. But I can appreciate the musicianship, and I can appreciate like just the variety of the types of like, you know, death vocals this guy does.
Right.
It reminds me kind of like on the, not a flip side, but like, are you familiar with Lorna Shore?
Yeah, yeah.
Their latest vocalist, Will Ramos, he does like all like the current, like all the, like the more modern death type vocals from like the mm-hmm. really high thing to like the really low, like demon from hell thing that people apparently can do now.
Yeah.
And he does it all. And it really reminds me of that. Like, just like they got all the voices, like, so whatever yeah. kind of like yeah. song they're writing, like they can just, you know, what style of death vocals am I doing, which is really cool. And I can appreciate that a lot.
Yeah. What about you, man? What are you listening to right now?
Well, you know what? I'm going to say this. I'm going to break the segue here that you so yeah. generously provided me and just say, I appreciate you've answering the question back to me because I'm doing recommendations during the interview now. So I appreciate you just tossing them right back at me. I'm making it nice and easy, even though I'm just screwing up the flow right now. But no, I did want to bring up this band to you, and it is Riffobia. R-I-F-F-O-B-I-A. Riffobia.
I've not heard of that.
Now, a band like Riffobia, they can only play thrash. Like, you can't sure. name a band that. And they're from Greece, and they've been around since I want to say mid-2000s, and they're just really good thrash, man. Just really good old school thrash. And it's the production on the albums are it's good enough to sound modern, but it's got enough of that kind of old school feeling to where it could, you know it's not going to be such like a because let's be honest, thrash albums in the 80s, like the production was
terrible.
Yeah, you know, but there's a charm to it, you know, and sure, they kind of take sure. that charm and have that, like, have that kind of that modern feel to it. And right. I went, this album, their latest album, self-titled, Riffobia, has been out since I think March. And I've been meaning to get back to it because I heard a few tracks off it. I'm like, this is really, really cool. And I just went back to it this week and I'm like, yeah, this fucking rules. I've been kind of on a thrash kick myself lately.
Nice.
So this was definitely up my alley at the right time. But I think, you know, you being up,
I just added it to my queue, man. I mean, I'm looking at the album art and just reading the titles of the songs, and I'm like, this sounds up my alley already. So
100%. I will add something new to you. There's a band, right. a newer band that I really, really love called Orbit Culture.
Okay.
Orbit, like the sun orbits, and then culture. Mm-hmm. They best described as the angry teenage children of Gojira and Metallica.
Okay.
But they're definitely, that's how like their first album that really like, that's the spokes to me. Cause the clean singing has that like, Justice for All snarled James kind of has even that same kind of mm-hmm. tonality. But then they have the real, just like super low tune growls and stuff. And they're not afraid to groove on a riff. They know how to close out a song. They have a few songs to where it's like, you know, it's great something to like work out to, but like the end riff they put on a song, like the breakdown or whatever, it's just like, I'm going to hurt myself one day because these things are just so heavy. And they just came out with a new song called From the Inside. And they have a new album coming out, I think, when is that? Say September or August.
Okay.
But yeah, From the Inside came out, and it's literally the best song they've ever done. Like, okay. It is like a full mature, you know, maturation of what they were doing. And which was really exciting because I started listening to them from their first album, and I'm like, these guys are really good, and they're definitely like every subsequent release, I'm like, they are getting closer and closer to what I'm hoping is like their thing, their Black Album, their Rust in Peace, their whatever it is.
Right.
They get
right.
really close to it. And if this song is any indication of it, like this album's going to be a fucking killer one. But it's definitely,
awesome.
It's just like groovy. It's got, you know, it's not afraid to have some dynamics and stuff like that. So I highly recommend you check that out. It's a little bit
too.
I mean, I know you're no purist about any type of metal thing. So you're not like, oh, it's, you know, I only listen to, you know, strict, these strict subgenres of metal or whatever. So I would
That's a younger man's game. I'm like, if I think it sounds cool, I'm going to jam it. I've been listening to a lot of non-metal lately too. You know, I think it's good to mix it up, you know?
Oh no. Yeah. Trust me. Yeah. Me too. Like I used to have one of the songs from the Daredevil Netflix soundtrack on my, on my running list. Cause it was a really good, you know, the soundtrack on that show was really good.
Sure.
And I was looking for it because I'm like, oh, I haven't listened to that one in a while, that mix. And I couldn't find it anywhere. And I couldn't remember the name of the fucking song. And I'm like, it's not the main title song. It's not like, you know, some of the ones I'm looking. And I'm like, I had this in my library. Why can't I find it? And ever since when Disney bought or got the rights back or whatever, they rebranded them all. And for some reason that took that out of my library. So I finally found it. And, you know, I'm talking about the track Bogwell's Gym. It's a really great like track. It's like if you're like running or something, it's just got a great vibe, a great mood.
Nice.
But it's definitely not metal.
Okay.
But and then surprisingly enough, a lot of Lizzo's been coming up because I share an Apple Music subscription with my wife, so she added Lizzo to like her stuff. So when my playlists end, all of a sudden I'm getting like Lizzo songs show up because it'll start playing whatever is in my library.
Amazing.
And it's really funny because I'm ending on like, you know, some super ultra heavy, you know, guttural scream metal, and then you know, Good as Hell comes on or something like that, or about damn time, and it's just like, but I'm like, hey, I'm in it. It's not working. That's for sure.
Sure.
I will say though, I've also did go back recently, and I've been listening to the two Power Trip album because I realized went in depth on those.
That's another one I jam Power Trip on the regular. It's in the rotation always.
Yeah, so I'm definitely going to probably put out an episode in a month or so going over those two albums, just because, you know, I think they're worth some extra highlighting because they really, really are some. That's what started my thrash kick because I'm like, you know what? They had like a live album come out recently, and it popped up back in my purview. And I'm like, oh, let me check out some of these tracks from the live album. I'm like, wow, this is really good. Let me go back to the first album because I never really went through it all. And I'm just like in it. So now I'm like all in thrash mood and, you know, looking for my jean vest.
Power Trip is amazing. Like probably one of the best live shows I've ever been to. I'm so glad that I got to see them, you know, before the second song even started, I was just like blown away. I was like, these guys rock so hard and put on such a good show. And it was like that, the whole set. It was really great.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a total bummer, but you know, thankful that we have the two albums that Riley was there to help give to us and all that. So.
Absolutely.
And I got my eyes peeled for whatever that band or what those musicians are going to be working on next.
Curious.
But yeah, that's it for me for metal for this week. So let's talk about some comics. What comics have you been digging lately?
Oh man, so the other thing that people told me that I didn't really believe very much was that the more you make comics, the less you read comics. And
oh god,
that's kind of where I'm at. You know, I it's funny because I look at comics all the time. You know, it's not like I'm not checking out comics, but I'm not like buying a lot of series as they come out right now. And I know that's terrible, but what I am doing is rereading a lot of things that are big for me, and then also buying stuff that I've always wanted but never had in my collection. You know, for whatever reason, like that one issue of Punisher by Frank Tarran, or you know, these like random back issues or random stories that I don't own, or you know, also I try to save up a little bit and get artist editions more now. And so for comics, the only thing that I had on my poll, which is over now, was the Trad Doctor Strange book, which I mean, Trad is I don't know, huge inspiration, just one of the greatest people working today. And then I'll read it. I'm lucky that I have like anything that my friends do, like Stegman and Porter and Dan, like I can usually get it from them and read it. And so but you know, what I'm usually doing is studying. I'm trying to like look through comics and study and learn a lot. And so what I'll do is, if I'm buying like the last kind of big artist edition thing I got was the Frank Frazetta art book, which has been a really cool and inspirational thing for me to look through. And then I get the Michael Golden one this next, the Marvel Stories one this next month when that comes out. And then for studying, I'm looking at whatever it changes depending on what I'm drawing. But, for the Schlub, I've been looking at a lot of old Jason Pearson, a lot of old Jim Lee. I've been looking at Brian Hitch lately because the big battles in the Ultimates.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been looking at a lot of Otomo stuff, manga, of course. But yeah, you know, I'm not getting any monthlies right now. I really need to. I did buy some minis and get some minis when I was at Cake, which was really great, they're all escaping me right at this moment. And I am looking forward to a few different things that are coming out. My friend MS Harkness has a book coming out called Time Under Tension for Fantagraphics. I'm very excited for that. That's coming out soon. Everyone should go order it. And then, of course, Dan is working on Transformers. I'm excited to see more of what he's doing there. But yeah, you know, it's weird. Like, I feel like I'm looking at comics 24/7, but I'm not really up on a lot of current stuff. Always open for suggestions, though, you know. And I did get a lot of cool stuff when I was at Heroes Con too. So I don't know, man. What about you? What are you reading? What are you recommending?
Well, like you, when you're spending so much time, you know, making them, or you're trying to find time to make them, sitting down and devoting time to reading them is very difficult. Which you know, hence why I try to do recommendations, because it forces me to stop and like let me read some of these things I've been wanting to read. And then hopefully they're good enough that I feel comfortable saying, hey, you should check this out too, which, you know, thankfully pretty much everything is, just because comics, there are so many amazing comics out there.
Absolutely.
But you know, like you, I have my circle of buds who will send me copies of things. You know, sometimes, you know, since I do the show, sometimes people will send me books and things like that. Or, you know, just like you sent me an advanced copy of The Schlub. And, well, I can hardly say I recommend it to anyone who loves anything you've ever touched before, or who just loves a good fun take on a superhero thing, or just, but it doesn't feel like it's another twist of a superhero thing either. It definitely feels like the spirit of like a Beef Bros, or just kind of like the things you've done, where it's got that foot in like independent vibe. Granted, it's Image Comics, but you know, some people sure. would argue Image isn't exactly that independent anymore.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Even though it is, because you guys aren't being told what to do. Right. You're making the book you want to make. And, you know, I'll glow more about the Schlub later, but yeah, I definitely recommend that. But something I actually did sit down and read, and was not wholly influenced by my daughter, but definitely picked by my daughter, was the Godzilla trade, Unnatural Disasters.
Nice.
I think in the past couple of years, I've reignited my love of kaiju stuff and collecting Godzilla vinyls and things like that, and getting some Godzilla books. And, you know, my daughter has picked up my appreciation, the big G. I think about a year ago when I actually bought one of the bigger $30 collected editions, just like a few mini series or whatever. She was all into it and all that. So we were in Chicago, and I'm like, hey, you want to go to, we're going to my, parents' house. And then all of the blue, my daughter asked, like, can we go to the comic shop and get a new Godzilla comic? And I'm like, what am I going to say? No. Now, I had planned to get her the Godzilla, was it the Destroyer versus Biollante Arrivals issue that Chicago artist Sean Dove drew. But right. They were out of stock on that.
Good for Sean, though.
Yeah, yeah. I'll have to snag that another time. But she did pick out this trade, Unnatural Disasters, which contained a lot of the stories I've been wanting to read anyway, like Godzilla in Hell from James Stocco.
Yeah, that's a good one.
A whole bunch of like the Legends series, which, you know, the book starts with a showcase for my boy Anguirus. You know, my definitely my second favorite Godzilla universe kaiju. And so that I recommend that to people if you're looking for some good kaiju comics, because I'm not going to name the first collection I bought, but a lot of them were kind of like, oh, here's our fun take on a Godzilla story. And it really didn't feel like Godzilla stories. It felt like just these weird variations of them.
Right.
And these feel like I'm watching Godzilla movies. Like it feels like, you know, the kaiju action is really great. And, you know, it doesn't hurt when you got James Stocco in the book doing Godzilla stuff. But also Matt Frank was one of the artists on some of the book, on some of the stuff. And he's a big kaiju artist that I follow online and all that. So I definitely recommend that if you're feeling in the kaiju mood, especially after that Godzilla minus one trailer teaser drop a couple days ago, and people seem to be a lot more catching that kaiju fever, I definitely check out Godzilla Unnatural Disasters. It's a big book. I think you can get it on Amazon for like bucks, but, you know, see if your local comic shop has it, because support like local comic shops, because they will. But yeah, definitely get your hands on that. I highly recommend that.
Nice. Yeah, man. I've always been a casual Godzilla fan, and I think I've always maybe thought, oh, someday I'll get into it and get the definitive, you know, want stories, you know. So I'm glad that you're doing that, and then you can tell me which ones. So I'll write that one down.
for sure. Yeah, that one I've read the whole collection, and I didn't think there's a weak link in any of them, which is hard for a big collection like that, because there's a lot of stories in there, and there's definitely just, you know, a ton of great sorry, I keep knocking into my microphone, a ton of great kaiju stuff. And listeners, if I don't know if you can tell, I don't know if it's gonna show up on the recording, Tyrell swears he can't hear it, but my neighbor has like a generator going on situation happening right now, so there's like a whole thing happening that feels like it's really loud in my room right now. So if you hear some sort of weird background thing or whatever, it's my neighbor's generator, because it's a long story, but yeah. So sorry about that. But we move forward. Well, hopefully everyone enjoyed our recommendations. I'm definitely looking forward to trying to pick up some more monthly comics again and things like that. You know, the demise of Comixology really kind of kneecapped that for me, because it was so easy to just go and like pick up a few books and just read them on my iPad and all that, and just
Have you tried the Kindle stuff much? I was just actually just thinking about picking up a few things on there. I don't know if it's any good or.
I mean, a little bit. It just feels so much more cumbersome.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I know it's kind of dumb, but it feels like you're adding like a 3 or 4 extra steps for me to do a thing that I used to do really easily. And it just goes further down the list, especially since, you know, it feels like whenever I'm like, I need to get some new books to read, like 3 or 4 of my buddies or people I kind of know or people I like are running Kickstarters.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, I'll back those digital versions. And then, you know, in a couple months, then all of a sudden I have like a huge backlog of digital stuff to read. So,
right.
Which I'm pretty sure I have to double check on that because I'm really terrible about downloading my books. I think there's been 3 separate occasions where I've forgotten to download my rewards for the book, and it's been so long the link isn't working anymore. Mm-hmm. And I just feel bad asking the person for it, so I just found it on Comixology and bought it. Just because, like, oh man, I feel real bad about saying, hey, I never downloaded this, can you like take time out of your day to like send me another link, because it's it's not on them. Like, they provided the easiest way for me to get the book, a direct link,
right.
And I just sat on it. So
I feel you, man.
That said, if anyone ever, you know, backs any of my upcoming Kickstarters and that happens to you, feel free to bug me. I'm happy to say. But yeah, it's just one of those things. So, but like you said,
we live in an age of like lots of access, but there's just so many different ways to get things that it's kind of, you know, it makes you long for the days. It's like, oh, you want to read this? We'll go to the bookstore and get it. You know, it's like, that's it, done.
I mean, it's an overload of option paralysis. Like everything has that now. Like you want to watch something on TV, like DVR was great, but like now it's like literally anything.
Yeah. Anytime you want anything, except for that one movie that you really want to see, that's not available.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then, you know, and it's like that with music. It's like that with books and just all these things we were kind of forced to make a decision on.
Yeah.
My wife and I come across that every single Saturday. We have like a standing movie night and we take turns picking the movies, and it just becomes like, oh, sometimes it's like, I swear there are like a bunch of movies we wanted to see in the theaters, and we're like, oh, we'll rent that later. And it doesn't, now we can't find them, or we don't remember what they were. And then it flips to like, there's like 5 or 6 we can pick from, which one? And it's usually like, well, which one's under 2 hours?
Yeah. I'm sleepy. I can't, My wife and I are trying to, when we watch stuff together now, like if we're having, you know, to make it easier, we've just picked some series to watch. We're like, okay, we're watching the Terminator movies. So whatever's next, we'll watch that one. And that kind of helps, because really it's just the, you know, as a parent, it's the, whatever, the 2 hours you get together every day, you know, you want to just like, your brain is dead. You just want to be, you know, chilling out. So
you just want to kind of zone out to get.
Right.
Well, yeah, you know, I think there's been a lot of great TV shows. Like my wife and I really enjoyed, you know, we had a standing Ted Lasso date every week.
Cool.
We both really got into Shrinking on Apple TV. That was really good. I don't know if you have Apple TV or not, but
I do not, but I've heard about that show. I've heard it's good.
Yeah, it's really good. Harrison Ford's so damn good in that show. He is so funny. And he also, like, the more dramatic moments, he definitely like elevates that show. But everyone's good on that show.
Cool.
And then what else? What other shows were we getting into? Obviously, we have our Mandalorian. A lot of people weren't hot on the recent Mandalorian series, but
we watched the first 2 seasons. I haven't watched any since then, for no real reason. I just haven't.
So a funny thing about Mandalorian is, like, I heard a lot about the show or whatever. I wanted to watch it, and my wife's like, I don't know. She was not really big into the Star Wars. Like, you know, she didn't see Star Wars in full until she was, you know, like until like 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so watching all these movies, and we kind of, you know, we started in chronological order. So like her whole thing was like, after the end of the prequel trilogy, she's like, wait, so everyone loves Darth Vader, right? They think he's awesome and all that. I'm like, yeah, she's like, he killed a bunch of fucking kids.
Yeah.
why do people? I'm like, well, that appreciation for him was before they revealed that's what he did.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, and so she's just like the entire premise of like the redemption of Darth Vader in the sequels in the original trilogy. She's just like, no, fuck this guy, killed a bunch of kids.
Yeah, not so the like, finest like, you know, hour.
I can't argue that, honey. I really can't. For the sake of the universe, he needed to be redeemed. But she really, you know, and she watched the sequel trilogy with me, and she was like, it's okay. You know, she liked the first, you know, like me, she liked the first one, was okay with Last Jedi, and Rise of Skywalker was, you know, garbage. But it was, in our eyes, anyway, it was fine, I guess, but it really, anyway, I'm not going to get a rant on that.
But you can have an opinion about that. You don't have to apologize.
I just don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. Yes.
But so I'm trying to convince her on The Mandalorian or whatever. And she's like, I don't know. I'm like, well, it's like a whole new series. You don't really have to know a lot about the lore and stuff like that. It's just kind of in the world or whatever. So, all right. I did not tell her about Baby Yoda / Grogu. I did not tell her about that. So the second that little guy appears, she's like, bitch, I'm in. Because if you're not, like, granted, you know, the character's cute and all that, but if you're a parent, the level of accuracy they have with this little creature and his behaviors like a toddler is just like, you're instantly like, okay, you know, you have that much more attachment to the whole scenario and all that. But yeah, so, you know, we have a few shows here and there that we really enjoyed. But we tried watching, I Think You Should Leave.
Oh,
comedy series.
I love that show. I don't know how you feel about it, but I love it.
I love all the clips I see. I think they're very funny because people like sharing the clips online. And so I was watching some of the episodes and I thought it was pretty funny. I think it was like a bit too absurdist for her taste.
You know, my wife, every time my wife sees me watching it, she'll walk in and she'll be like, there's a lot of yelling in this. And then she'll leave.
Yeah.
It's not for everybody either, but it's definitely, it feels like the natural progression of like stuff that started with Adult Swim and Mr. Yeah. Show. And like, it feels like people that were into that would probably be into I Think You Should Leave.
It's definitely my line, like that level of like absurdism and just kind of out there kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's, because a lot of stuff with like Mr. Show, like a lot of the Adult Swim stuff, like I could appreciate them being weird and doing things like that, but it was never something I'm like, oh man, this is hilarious. You know, I'm busting the gut here. Meanwhile, you know, I still chuckle with the them swearing at the babies first episode, or you know, was it? Yeah. So anyway, but I did recently get Paramount Plus, and I checked out Picard. I don't know if you're a Star Trek guy.
I am a Next Gen and Deep Space Nine guy. I haven't given much of the other series.
Picard is definitely the sequel to that, I guess.
Okay.
For sure.
Okay.
There's a lot of Deep Space and Next Gen threads in there. The first season I really enjoyed. The second season I skipped the last half of it because it wasn't bad, but my trial for Paramount Plus was ending and I heard it. and season three is essentially another season of The Next Generation with the cast. So I just went, I asked around like, hey, do I need to watch this? And I was like, no, no. And I was like, nothing really carries over. So I'm like, okay. So then I, you know, watched a quick recap video of everything. And I'm like, all right, I got the gist of what happened the rest of the season. And then season three, I loved it. It was great.
Awesome.
And
awesome.
It ended in a spot to where I'm like, I need more of this. And I really liked where they ended things. And they introduced some new characters who were like, just perfect, like they fell right in with like that the Next Generation Deep Space vibe and all that. So if you get around to it, if you get a chance to, definitely check out seasons 1 and 3 of Picard. I think they're definitely worth
it. I don't know if I've ever tried Paramount, so maybe I should get a free pass for that. And maybe as a Halo fan, I'll suffer through the Halo show just to see what that's all about.
What else on Paramount? I want to check out some more of the Star Trek stuff, though, because cool. I went to cancel and they gave me like a stupidly like 60% off. Like, hey, yeah,
they
don't
got
go.
You, Don. They got you.
Like 60% off for the first year, and I'm like, well, all right, I guess this is kind of stupid cheap. I guess I'll watch some more Star Trek, guys. Fine. But yeah, so I definitely want to check out some of the, you know, some of the new shows they have, like Strange New Worlds and the Lower Decks animated show that everyone seems to really enjoy and all that. So
cool.
Yeah, snag yourself a Paramount Plus and watch some Picard.
Sure,
you're definitely not gonna regret it. So, all right, enough yapping about all that. Let's get to the meat of what we need to talk about. Let's get to the schlub. Now you've been on a press tour essentially. Talking about this book. So, you know, I don't want to have you repeat yourself too much with that.
I will repeat myself as many times as I have to. Well, I mean, this is, I'm so excited and so honored. And so just, I want to talk to everybody about it.
Awesome. Well, the schlub is from KLC, AKA Kids Love Chains Press, written by Ryan Stegman, Kenny Porter, drawn by you. Colors by Mike Spicer and letters by John J. Hill. And I read the first issue. I really, really, really enjoyed it. Oh, I think, out of the entire issue, it was like everything was really great, except anything that Ryan Stegman did on this issue sucks. Everything else, top tier, S tier, you know, A+ was. And I don't know what Ryan did. But whatever he did,
I don't know what he did either, honestly. Just kidding.
It's the worst. But no, from the opening page, you know, it's definitely, it looks like you're just having an immense amount of fun. And yeah. it's clear on every panel. You're definitely just taking your style, like from when we first met, to Eris, to Beef Bros, to this, there's been such a maturation of your style, such a refinement of your line work and your choices, but also this exponential rise of just dynamics and pushing figure work and pushing, you know, proportions and things like that, and really making it all incredibly cohesive. And like you brought up Jason Pearson being one of those influences, and I don't want to speak out of turn, but I believe, you know, rest in peace, I believe he passed away recently.
Yeah.
I know he had some
polarizing figure polarizing for sure figure. I will never make apologies for anything he said or did, but his comics have been an influence on me.
the preceding 20 years of his work was very influential to a lot of people, and I definitely can see a lot of it here. I see, you know, I think I mentioned this before. I see, like, you know, not so much now, but I would see like kind of like the Bart Sears kind of slickness,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mentioned a lot online. You know, whenever you post something like, you know how to draw like a big dude, a big, and they have that heft and that weight, but
yeah.
With the schlub, you definitely, with the main character, you know, Cirrus being a big dude, he has that heft, he has that weight, but he doesn't feel bulky, even though he's just like a giant dude. You know, he has that lightness to him. So when he's doing these big, huge, superheroic moves and flying and stuff like that, it feels more appropriate. It feels like, yeah, that this dude flies, this dude, you know, even though he's a big dude, mm-hmm. like he flies, like it's kind of like a refined version of almost, because if you ever read those Prime comics, sure. You know, they that was a giant, you know, even more ridiculously giant dude. But like, There's so much beef on that guy that, you know.
I really appreciate you. You know, that's really nice of you to notice all that, Don. I really appreciate you following the work for this amount of time and seeing the evolution. And I'm glad that it comes across, because I'm really trying to improve every day. You know, I feel like I want to be a student of comics, and I want to continue to try new things and try to master different things. And you know, all these things you're talking about, I mean, I, you know, we can talk about them in as much detail as you want, but like, this is like, you know, these are the things I'm obsessed with. You know, these are the things when I sit down to work, I want to give myself these challenges. Like, can I make this look faster, or can I make this look heavier, or can I make this guy's body do something that we haven't seen before? And, you know, some of the stuff you mentioned, like just, you know, drawing people that have heft and weight has been something I've even focused on over time. And so I'm really glad that it's coming across. It makes me feel really good. And I think that some of these things come with the projects that I do. You know, you try to zero in on what's right for each book. And then of course, some of that just ends up being a hallmark that you carry forward with everything you do. And, you know, I think with Beef Bros was a big step in a direction of how can you make these figures that are super and imposing and have this superhuman quality to them, but at the same time they can be goofy, or they can be scared, or they can be off balance, and then applying that to the schlub, where you have a guy in someone else's body, you know, two guys in the wrong body. And so what does a superhero look like if it's a superhero but I'm in their body, or you're in their body? Like, we don't move the way a superhero does necessarily. So that's something I thought about a lot. I'm really glad that that was coming across.
Yeah, 100%. And another thing I really appreciate is, it feels like these days when I read, you know, modern superhero style comics, that the artwork, like, seems to be kind of like people are kind of afraid to make their lines too thick. And you just lay it down and it looks fantastic. And, you know, and it's never, you know, and that was always something I struggled with. So I noticed it and I appreciate it, that, you know, like how heavy is too heavy for some line work. But you definitely like seem to have cracked or have absorbed enough to like hit that right mark of like, this is big, thick lines, which denote strength and power and just that heft and all that. But it's also it contrasts against some of the more delicate lines and stuff you do really well, and it doesn't feel like, oh, it just works and gels really well together. Are you the type, you kind of answered the question, but are you the type of person who can just sit down and draw a thing, or do you kind of have to obsess about it a little bit in your head, like what's this going to look like? Or do you just like all you're thinking on the page, or is it already like pre-rendered in your head and you're trying to duplicate that on the page?
Right. That's a good question. I feel like that comes up a lot. And it's weird for me, you know, when I'm coming up with ideas or trying to figure out what something's going to look like, I will go into it with maybe a concept that I want to accomplish or a challenge that I want to give myself. But so much of drawing for me is this conversation between my eyes, my hand, my brain, and sort of like thinking and making marks and then assessing those marks and then adjusting and then feeding that back into the loop. And it becomes this feedback loop where you kind of end up, you know, iterating until you get to where you need to be. And a lot of that comes from, you got to concentrate on the thing you're doing. But at the same time, I think that for me personally, it's not that I have an image in my head that I'm trying to get on paper. Honestly, that sounds like a nightmare. And I don't know how that would ever happen, for me at least. And I think a lot of people that say that, I think that they're using it in sort of a poetic way, maybe, because I don't know. And maybe, I mean, everyone's brain is different. So maybe other people's brains do work like that. I don't know how it is for you or for other artists, but for me, it's very much a conversation between my eyes, my hand, and my brain, and sort of just what's going on. And I think that that's where some of the different innovations actually grow out of, is, you know, I might start a drawing and, I'll be working on a face and maybe he's throwing a punch. And so there's an arm that's in front and, you know, I draw it all and maybe I'll start with similar line weights, but then, you know, I'm like, well, how can I make this pop more? So I'll start to thicken it up. Or other times I just want a big, fat, thick line down the middle. I'm like, okay, now how can I put some delicacy back in here? Or how can I make sure that this line still looks free, but intentional? It's a lot of back and forth. And one of my favorite things to do, I rarely draw like, quote, for fun anymore. This was a discussion I was having with someone the other day that the other thing that happens when you do this full time is you're just, you know, I found for myself that I don't really keep a sketchbook as much as I used to. And honestly, the place I draw for fun now is on my streams when I stream on YouTube. That's the only time I'm doing stuff that's not maybe work. But when I am drawing for fun, one of the things I like to do is experiment a little bit, whether that be with a different brush or drawing a character I've never drawn before, or trying some technique that I've heard about but never tried, or whatever. You know, I just the other day I was drawing something that sometimes I draw things that I don't post, and I did some, you know, those just, you know, X-Acto knife razor type raindrops across it, you know, those little scratches. Yeah. And that's something I've always kind of wanted to play with more in my pages, but I want to play with it outside of that first to get a little more confidence with it. But, but yeah, I don't know if I've gone off,
No. What you're saying is it's all great stuff. And I am one of those people who, unfortunately, like, I have the image in my head.
And oh yeah.
Then I'm trying to duplicate it on page, which
you
is
poor bastard.
Something I've been really trying to do, and say I'm probably like at a 40-60, not in my favor split of doing this, is allowing myself to deviate from that and just. Yes. See what gets drawn out and all that. And one of the things, you know, I've discussed this on the show before, but like, I'm not a sketchbook person. I never was. I understand the importance of practice and doing all that things, but my line of thinking is always, I have to be doing a thing. Mm-hmm. That's how I learn. Mm-hmm. So if I, you know, putting out comics that I've, you know, releasing comics or putting out drawings to the world for people to see is how I learn to do things. So like, sure. Warts and all, like, I'm, you know, I could see things, you know, for better or worse, you know, you know, when I'm doing things, and I don't have stacks of sketchbooks with full of terrible or great drawings that no one is ever going to see, because I'm trying to work a thing out, because it's always on the page. And, you know, that leads into what you kind of said, the drawing for fun thing, where it's like, I've actually been, you know, I'm hoping once I'm past this current deadline crop and then my kids are back in school and I'll have a couple hours during my day to really focus on, you know, the comics sequential stuff, that I'm hoping I can give myself like one night a week to kind of like learn watercolors.
Oh, cool.
And not necessarily do it for comics, just to start doing some watercolors.
Experimenting with other mediums is always super fruitful. You know, it's never bad to, you know, try something else. It brings a whole new perspective into your workflow. I the last time I did that was I did some screen printing. I took a screen printing kind of co-op type class, and it was so awesome and made such a huge difference in my work. I'm sure if you pick up watercolor, you're going to, because that's a medium that requires you to be a little more open to what's going to happen. And I think that all artists could benefit from that, you know?
Yeah. And so I'm wanting to incorporate some of that kind of mood to it, because I also realized that when it comes to the art, as much as I love it, like, all for, I don't want it to always be for a thing, you know.
Sure.
You know, not that I would never be against, like, if I got comfortable enough to like introduce it into some sort of comic work or whatever, but I don't have an interest in doing watercolor on comics. I have zero interest in doing that, but I have interest in learning watercolors. So even if it is drawing comic book style things in watercolors, I don't have an interest in like that being my style. Cause, you know, I like Kelly Williams, for example, amazing artist.
Really great just saw him at Heroes. Love that guy.
Yeah. Really great at watercolors. So, but you know, so I always appreciate the work he's showing with that. And, you know, I hit him up like, what do you suggest? I'm just trying to like dumb my way through it. And then he gave me some great suggestions on things to start with. But that's it. Like, I'm not going to be like trying to like do a cut to like 6 months from now where I'm like, oh, I just put out my first watercolor cover for my old project. I'm like, you know, but you, yeah. For now, that's what it is, you know?
You got to take some of those. Yeah. I mean, a big part of, I think, growth is exploration and taking some of the pressure off. Mm-hmm. You got to do a lot of exploring and work that doesn't quite work, you know, drawings that don't quite work before you're ever going to get good ones. I had a teacher always say, you got to do 1,000 bad drawings to get one good drawing. And man, the other day when I was erasing a cover, I was working on the 8th, 10th time. I was like, okay, he was right.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, as stressed out as I am right now, because I'm trying to do, you know, alternate between two books at the same time or, you know, around the same time and all that. And, you know, one book, it's my baby, you know, so basically whatever I draw, you know, as long as it looks, you know, professional, it's what goes, right? And the other one is managed, like very directed, like very like, oh, can you make this hand more like this?
Well, maybe, is it nice to have both going at the same time then to balance them off a little bit?
And as stressful and aggravating that as that can be as an artist, I've doing this my third issue now, you know, because I'm working with a person who's directed movies. So they, you know, she wants to direct the art in the comic. And it was very rocky to begin with. And it's not always like the smoothest transitions. Cause a lot of times I have to say like, no, if you want me to tweak this, I have to redraw all this other stuff and that's not going to happen.
Right.
Other times it's like, okay, it's kind of forcing me to, you know, do things I wouldn't normally do. And if I didn't have my own creator own book to fall back on, I definitely wouldn't be doing this other book. I'd be like, no, right. I'm done. See you later. Right. But having that contrast of like, okay, here's a book where I'm being, you know, much more scrutinized, or not scrutinized. I'm having less control, far less control.
Sure. Sure.
Versus one where I have pretty much 100% complete control.
Yeah. Total like
control. It's created a very, it's forced me to come up with solutions and things, that have benefited both, and doing something that has my own, I have complete control on, and I can try something different if I want to, or, you know, mess with even though I work digitally, you know, mess with a brush I just made or something for a texture or something like that, can bring that into the other thing and have that openness to bring that and utilize that, which I've done both ways. So, you know, I've enjoyed at least very much the result of that, even though I'm incredibly stressed out right now. because I have to get a lot of stuff.
I bet, man.
I have to get like a lot of stuff done in 2 weeks before I promised my family that I would not be working on anything for a solid week so we can have a full on staycation where daddy doesn't
have a
couple hours of work here and there every day.
Right, right.
So yeah, we'll see how that goes. You know how that goes.
Where it's a grind, buddy.
You need to make
somebody's gotta make the lines, right?
Yep.
It is hard though. Balancing the family is really tough. And that's a thing that, you know, I went full time doing art and comics and illustration stuff, you know, about 4 or 5 years ago now. And within, I guess it was 4 years because within 6 months of me quitting my job is when we got pregnant. And, you know, I had all these ideas in my head because it wasn't totally unplanned, but it was a little earlier than we were expecting, you know? And, I had these visions in my head of what my studio life would be like as an artist and all these things. And then it immediately was turned into surviving, you know, the infant part of it, which was really hard for me. And then working into finding that balance between taking care of your kids, spending time with your family and getting your work done. And it's a really, really challenging thing because comics, as you know, as you're saying, it just takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of energy and it's hard, man. It's really hard. I would say that's been one of the bigger challenges for me too, as I've gone on this journey. So I feel you.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you know, my wife and I, we got pregnant with our daughter. It wasn't planned. We made the decision, like we're going to start.
Right.
But it like, we were lucky in that happened right away. All right. And the plan wasn't even ever for me to stay home and be stay at home dad. But we realized, oh no, I was able to find something I could do part time at home in my own hours, not art, but like in my own hours to basically earn the same amount of money we would have if we had to pay for pay for daycare or something like that.
Right. That's that same equation that we all have to do in our heads. And it's never a great answer.
So it was like, oh man. And it was really rough. Like the first year was really rough because my wife was, we were living in Chicago, but we lived like 40 miles north of Chicago. So my wife wasn't seeing my daughter as much as, you know, we could have her because, you know, she would be sleeping or, what have you. And she's, you know, on the road for a total of 3 hours a day top of her work schedule. It was really, really brutal. On top of the fact that, you know, the financial situation was really, really tight. And like, it was a lot of getting used to. But then, you know, my wife found a job that was literally 4 miles from our house.
That's perfect.
That paid more, was much less stressful. And then so instantly like our lives changed because if my wife wanted to, she could just come home for lunch.
That's great. So we would,
there's like parks after, you know, so finding that balance. And then after that happened, we kind of started thinking like, okay, well, you know, I can start more seriously about doing art as some type of income, you know? And so, you know, we were kind of moving along there. I was doing some pitches and stuff like that. And after like 3 or 4 pitches I drew that like the people didn't anything with it, much less like they said they showed it around to a few people or whatever, but it wasn't picked up. But I have a distinct feeling like a couple of them, people just sat on it, didn't do anything. I'm like, well, that's wasting my time. Like, right. So, you know, that's when I started the whole, I started like, you know, I have to charge for things and, you know, things like that, you know, a bit more, because at the time I wasn't charging for pitches or whatever, because I didn't feel like I was deserving of that, which is dumb. If you're creating something, you should be compensated no matter what.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even if it's $10 a page, whatever, man, just you deserve some, you know?
Yep. You got to start somewhere.
Eventually things started picking up a little bit here and there. And then, you know, we're like, why don't we have more than one kid? So we're like, okay, let's do that. And then same thing right away. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. And then, you know, we scrambled and we, got our lives together. And for about a month and a half, cool. Because my daughter was in preschool. My son was a newborn, so he was, you know, having some good naps in the morning. So I was able to get a lot of work done in the morning while she was at preschool. And then you know, and this was beginning of 2020.
yeah.
So then we figured out what happens next, right?
Man, wrenches are always going to come flying at you, you know. And it's like I've been trying to grow in my ability to accept that. And to try to be a little more fluid, and it's been a big challenge for me. Yeah. And I think a lot of us had to face that these last couple of years. And as a creative person, it's even more nerve wracking in a lot of ways. Like I had, that sort of fear in me when things were going really south in 2020. Of like, oh my gosh, like, is anybody going to buy comics? Am I going to have a job? You know, like I'm sure a lot of people had that fear, but as a creative person, sometimes you feel like maybe the fear that you're the most disposable person around in any kind of financial situation, you know, someone's making decisions about their finances. But it's funny that I found that wasn't actually true. You know, I had that fear, but, people showed up and really showed that art was important, at least to me and to people I know. I mean, I'm not saying it wasn't hard. It's still hard right now, right? But I'm just happy that people are still willing to support the things I'm doing. And I try to put as much work and love as I can into those things because I know that it's a lot to ask of, you know, we all have these expenses, you know? So it's nice when people buy stuff, you know, from me. I feel honored.
No, and, you know, I'm mentioning all of this just because you brought up how, you know, the the idea of what your studio life was going to be. And, you know, I had that for like a month and a half. And then all of a sudden I'm sharing the office with my wife, which is fine. I love spending time with working with my wife or whatever. Like we don't work on the same job, obviously, but you know, we're definitely the type of people who are like, we're cool being around each other all day. But the fact that my daughter was at home, and then like, it wasn't, oh, she's at school. It's like, I have to sit with her while she's on remote school, which was, I'm sure many, if any other parents listening to any kids who had to do that, but there's a nightmare. I think Spanish, all that. But now, you know, this, but you know, at the beginning of this year, things were, you know, striving. My son was in preschool now. My daughter was like in all day school, and you know, so I was getting that groove back and all that. And then summer comes and it's just like, it went drastically downhill. So I don't know if your daughter is in school yet.
She's part-time in a daycare. So, you know, we have not experienced the summer crisis as I'm sure we will in the next couple of years.
But, yeah, it's fine. Cause my kids are great and all that. It's just like, you mentioned like having a structure, routine, things like that, you know, and, you know, I've discovered over the course of the pandemic that I in fact have ADHD, and that's, was a huge thing that I didn't really, it didn't really bother. It really didn't affect me until the pandemic hit, because like any of these like things I was able to like have some sort of relative structure to that kind of kept me going went out the window.
Right.
So everything was just like, so that's that structure thing where it's just like, you know, I work best when I have a good, when I have a good solid structure, but my mind actively fights against it every step of the way. So I don't know if you're someone who like loves structure, like you have your routine, you have your, like, I get up, I draw from this time to this time, or, you know,
I like a loose plan. I used to be a lot more, I had a lot of OCD tendencies, and I definitely was a control freak. And in my earlier life, and, having a child has made me, really loosen up on those things. And so I do have sort of a plan usually for each day and each week. I don't plan maybe super far in advance. And then also usually I leave a lot of flexibility, and I try to work that into my schedule of knowing like, okay, today I know I have X amount of time, but, I know that, you know, X, Y, and Z might be happening with my kid or my wife. And then, so I might have to be around still, so I can't go work somewhere else. Or, hey, today I do need to go work somewhere else because something's happening at the house, or, you know, those kind of flexibilities. And then sometimes it's a matter of, you know, an emergency comes up, or there's some kind of thing going on. So the other thing that I enjoy about it though, is that, I was such a structured person in the past. And one of the things I was so excited about when I did quit my job was the ability to kind of make my own schedule. So I will say that I do, so yes, I have a schedule to some extent. You know, I split watching kid duties. So I do a half a day on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we have her in childcare. So we both get a 9 to 5-ish day, but if I'm being honest, we don't usually get her there till after 9. So if I'm saying I'm at my desk at 9, that's not true. And then, I usually start cooking dinner for the family around 4:30 or 5. And then, cause I usually do most of the cooking, cause I like to cook. And then usually I'll go back to, yeah. And then I'll do like family time after dinner. And then after my kid's in bed, if it's a short day that I had at the table, I'll go back and work again at night till, I don't know, 11 or 12. Yeah.
Okay.
But that's my schedule. Sorry. Did you say something? I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. I'm also the main cook of the family.
Nice.
it's not that I love cooking. I'm just because there's definitely like things I like cooking, things I love making, but there's also like, you know, every day's dinner is not my favorite thing to do. So it's usually
That's been the challenge for me too, man. Yeah. It's like, I like to cook, but like sometimes, it's like, what can I get done in 20 minutes?
And I recently got a coupon for some HelloFresh, like some free HelloFresh meals or whatever. So I'm like, oh, you know, cool. Let me try that. Maybe that'll like give me some sort of like excitement about cooking or whatever. And I got those in and I'm like, yeah, the things we had were good. But like, man, I just like the instructions and all that. I'm like, I don't like this.
Same.
I know the things I like. And it did give me a couple ideas for the future and stuff like that. But yeah, it's just one of those things. I haven't crossed too many other dads who are like the main cook or whatever like that. So, you know, it's good. Cool. It's good to hear we're holding up, even
solidarity,
though
solidarity, man,
you know, it's not exactly gourmet meals every night over here at the Cardenas household. Like today was like, what was it? It's just, what did we have? We had ground turkey, peppers, onions, seasoned with brown rice and some cheese.
Nice. Yeah. It's like the, right. I wish there was more, you know, I wish I had more time to cook. I mean, yeah. Today I did okay because I didn't really work very hard today because I just finished a bunch of things. And, but I did make like a tinga, like a slow cooker tinga. Okay. And, we had some really delicious tacos this evening.
Yeah. You know, I will say like having my, my Instant Pot has been like,
oh, great. Yeah.
Life changing in terms of just, especially like in the fall and the winter, it's like, you know, I'm just going to make a nice stew today, you know? And then, you start it nice and early. So like the rest of the, like you're eating breakfast, but you smell stew. It's just like, you know,
yeah.
it's not a bad life though. No. But no, the slow cooker definitely helps, especially with stuff like, you know, some taco stuff or like some roasted pork and stuff like that, you know.
Oh, yeah,
helps change it up and things like that. So anyway, we've deviated far from the schlub, but so before we wrap things up, if we can let everybody know exactly what the schlub is about.
Well, the schlub is the story of Roger Dalton, who is a dentist, maybe not the best dentist, and he maybe has some other problems with his life, with an ex-wife and some overbearing parents and brother and sister. And so, you know, he's got a family and he's got a life, and he's kind of a schlub. Yeah, he's, you know, somebody who's maybe not making the best decisions for himself and makes a lot of trouble for himself. And he happens to switch bodies with the world's greatest superhero, who is Cirrus, who is the OP of the book. You know, he's Cirrus. He's the Superman. You know, he's the guy. And so it's about what happens after these guys switch bodies and how they deal with their lives and the problems of supervillains and those kind of things. And it is an absolute blast. For me, it's a chance to draw funny stuff, action stuff, dramatic stuff, scary stuff. I mean, there's something cool in every issue. Honestly, it's just been a real pleasure to draw. And I think that people really dig it. So yeah, it's coming out soon. We're way ahead of schedule as far as the work. You know, I'm almost, I'm working on the last issue of this first arc right now, issue 6. And so, I guess I you don't have to worry about the book coming out on time. You know, it will definitely be on time. You know, the books,
nice.
The first five books are all in the can and look amazing. So I'm very excited about it. It comes out August 23rd, final order cutoff for the first issues, July 31st. But yeah, I encourage everyone to go check it out and pick it up. And you know, Ryan Stegman, Kenny Porter do an amazing job with the writing, and, we got Mike Spicer, one of the best colorists in the industry today, working on colors, and John J. Hill doing a great job on the designs and the letters. I mean, it's my first book at Image too, so I like to tell people that, you know, this has been a long journey for me. I was like many folks, I'm sure, out there. I was a 12-year-old who bought that first Image comic, those first Image comics, and thought, this is the coolest thing ever. I have to do an Image comic someday. So definitely a bucket list thing for me. So you're going to see, I think, a lot of passion in the work. And it's, like I said, it's been a long journey to get here. You know, I didn't even have the courage to quit a day job, or I don't even want to say courage. I didn't have the, the willingness in myself to believe in myself to quit my day job until four years ago or so. So I'm very excited, and I hope people will check it out. And that's my pitch for the Schlub.
Well, you know, shame on me for not congratulating you on it being your image book, because I, being of the same, you know, age generation, you know, fucking huge. Like, it's amazing. And it is success that is, you know, well-deserved. I hope the Schlub, you know, does extremely well. I hope people pick it up. It's really, really fun. Like, it's, I've been kind of almost agnostic versus superhero type stuff as of late. And this was definitely something. It gave me kind of like the vibes of like when I was reading Invincible. It's superhero stuff, but it feels different. It feels like more. It feels like there's going to be something really cool and interesting happening. And I don't know what that is. You've definitely seeded some things in this first issue that I think are going to be coming, going to be pretty interesting.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot, there's a lot going on. Every script is like, I've been just surprised and like, you know, had all kinds of reactions to the scripts. And I'm glad you brought up too, that it feels like, you know, not to be cliche, but it's, we're trying to do something different with superheroes and not just, oh, it's some kind of new superhero with a new backstory. It's more, you know, let's tell the kind of stories that we all like to see in other mediums as well. You know, things that are, that have humor and they have action and they have drama and they have sad parts and they have all these things. And then for me with art, I'm not going to name anybody or say that there's some specific thing, but I feel like there's been a sort of a push towards a certain kind of realism and a certain kind of polish to a lot of superhero books right now. And I wanted to really bring some big energy in, you know, to really show these things in a way that it, that I find exciting, you know, not, I don't want it to look like I'm going over a poser model and building a real costume. And, you know, I want it to have a different kind of impact. And I think that's what, you know, Ryan and Kenny feel the same way. You know, everyone on the book wants to do the kind of things that you can only do in comics, you know, things that are, as far as like techniques and storytelling beats, you know, like, you know, the kind of things that, that make comics really special and unique. Like it's three, at least three, I would say probably four or five guys, you know, of our whole crew, you know, me and Kenny and Ryan and Mike and John, that just love comics. And we just want to make a comic. This isn't to set up a movie pitch for us. This isn't to sell, you know, we want to make a cool comic. Like that's our goal.
100%. And that passion definitely comes across. The pages are just chock full of just hard work and love for the medium of comics. And, you know, I'm not afraid to say, you know, I'm not afraid to say, like, it's some big declaration, like, you know, making monthly comics is hard, especially probably for a big two. There's so many demands upon you.
Oh, for sure.
But like you know, but there's no corners here. There are no, you know, where you're not afraid to just like fill in a background with a ton of stuff.
And then they get covered with word balloons half the time. But I feel like, you know what? The people that buy the art will get to see all that stuff.
Yeah, because you're working traditionally too. So there's that aspect of it, you know, and it definitely comes through, and it's definitely, I think, stands unique because, you know, the premise of the body swap and all that, that's a fun Jimmy Olsen son Superman comic from the 50s or whatever, but you know, who's doing the body swapping and what's going on with that person and you know how they react to that is so much more interesting than just the premise of it. And you guys know that, and you are definitely putting that out there with the story. So I'm excited to see where this goes. I had no doubts, but glad to hear that you're going to be right on time, get everything out. You and Mike make a great art team.
Thanks.
As much as I loved, you know, Fico's colors over you, like this is a different flavor, a different vibe, and it still works really, really well. It just feels like good.
It's so
fun
cool comics. To see the different colorists too. You know, that's a new thing for me working with colorists and Fico and Rossell. Amazing stuff on Beef Bros, man. I mean, stuff that really just changed the way I looked at my own work, you know?
Yeah.
And then to shift to Mike, who has a very different style, but he brings all these things that also caused me to maybe assess my work in a different way and hopefully learn something and grow. It's been so incredible and exciting.
Yeah. And it's definitely been kind of my experience too, with these two books with, you know, with Evie and the Helsings, I have Jason Millay coloring me, and he colors like he's not a super big renderer. Like, he definitely goes for vibe and mood. And so we're getting pages back where I'm like, I did not expect this page just to be a wash of purple with the lighting for the stage or something like that. You know, I expected like fully rendered things and, you know, all this stuff, but it's not. And I love it. It's awesome. Nice. And then with Spend the Night, Roman, the colorist there, he's also a fantastic artist in his own right, which is, you know, I just learned that. And I'm like, oh, so it's even more daunting when I have to send him pages now. I'm like, this guy's a really good artist himself. Like, here, you got to color me, bro. Sorry. But he has a very, very rendered style, and it's very worked, and it's very like, it's very different. So it is cool to see, you know, and I think it just highlights the importance of colorists these days in comics and how important they are to the look of a book. Because not that if Fico colored you on this book wouldn't look good, it would look fantastic, but the vibe would certainly be different. It would certainly feel more, I guess, like any of the realism or any of the groundedness you guys bring to it would be kind of cast aside a bit. And not necessarily a bad thing, but just like I said, a different vibe, and that's not the vibe you're going for. And Mike fits that perfectly. So,
Mike's great.
Awesome, that's awesome. And I won't spoil one of the cameos of people I saw in the book.
Did you catch a couple of those? Maybe.
Yeah.
Did you see? You saw someone running from some monsters? Maybe.
Yes, I saw someone running. And
there's a lot of Easter eggs in there, and there's a lot of Easter eggs in every issue, actually. So I'm excited to see if anyone catches any of them. I'm not even gonna tease anything other than that. There's so many Easter eggs.
You know what? When you guys are done, you get the trade. You should hold a contest or something.
That'd be cool. That's a good idea.
You can find certain ones, because I thought about doing that with Evie in the Helsings, because I throw a lot of like, there's a lot of like band posters. So I throw a lot of like fake band names there and all that. And I also throw in like, you know, some buddies bands and stuff like that. I asked a few people online, like, hey, you got band names from your old bands? Let me know. And then I'll, you know, if you got logos, even better, like, let me throw them in the book. But I felt like having like a real like subjective contest where it's like, if you can guess which one is my favorite fake band name, you get to win XYZ or whatever.
That's good.
Something like that, I think would be great. But I'll put this out there, and I'll put this out to anybody who's listening who makes comics. Feel free to put me in your comic and have me get squished, crushed, decapitated, whatever. Something terrible happened to me. I'm all for it. I don't normally look around that section of the internet, but I saw some people complaining about like James Gunn and Zack Snyder, and how James Gunn made himself look kind of silly in a cameo, and Zack Snyder was like, cool. I was like, why would you make yourself look like that? And I'm like, all I could think of is like every comic person I know was like, hey, can I draw? You're like, yeah, am I going to die? Like, it's always like, you know, I got a buddy, Josh, who, you know, every time I have a new series or a new comic or whatever, he's like, do I die in it? I'm like, yes, you do.
That's great, man.
So you know, just putting it out there. I know you're almost done with this arc, but you know, hey, if you need someone to get trampled by a building or eviscerated by a new villain, I'm available.
I'll see. There's a lot of big battles that I am about to embark on right now. So I'm as far as like big, awesome fights. So I'm very excited. I don't think that's too spoilery. I hope everyone expects a big, awesome fight at the end. So that's what they're going to get.
Awesome. Awesome.
Before I forget, I did get one question. I just wanted to check before I left, and I got a question. I got a question from someone named Henry.
Okay.
And he asked what my favorite character is in general and in the schlub. I guess comic character, I would assume.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're gonna have to answer this too now, Don.
All right.
Favorite comic character. Oof. That's really tough. That's really tough. Yeah, I'll answer the other one first. In the Schlub, my favorite character to draw is Roger, the dentist, the body of the dentist. So fun to draw, but there is actually a few characters that haven't really showed up yet that are my favorites for sure. There's a trio that shows up that is my favorite. They're my favorite characters in the book, and when that issue comes out, I'm excited to see what people think of them. And then favorite character. Oh, geez, that's almost impossible. But I might have to go with either Kaneda from Akira or the dog in We Three.
Oh, okay.
those are my choices, I guess.
You started saying Kaneda. I thought you were going to say Cable. Because we are
part of my favorite character to draw is probably Cable for sure. Yeah,
we have
that's an easy
mutual
one.
Cable love association happening.
Yes.
I will say okay. My favorite character from the Schlub is the old lady in the chair, only because I have the first issue to reference. But looking at that page, I have to say, like, Roger, what did you do to get that X? it's very much
they were a little younger, but yeah, you know, everybody's got some kind of charm or some ex weapon. I've seen some strange pair ups myself.
Oh, Roger. But no, I brought Roger's this looks like fun to draw, even from this, you know, the expressive face you've given him and things like that. But yeah, the old
I want to see
some
fan art from you and from anyone else that wants to draw these Schlub characters. I cannot wait to see other people draw my characters. So if you're struck, you do it.
Oh, it's definitely on my running list of like stuff I want to like just draw for fun once I'm over this next set of deadlines.
Definitely, man.
You know, I always want to get into the habit of doing at least once a week, just doing like a fun or whatever.
Yeah, you should, man.
If not, then at least for like when Inktober rolls around,
yes.
One Inktober, I ended up doing sketches like all my friends, like OCs,
characters. Nice.
So that was really fun to do. So like maybe, you know, at the very least, Tober, because I'm not doing Rifttober this year. So,
darn. I mean, I'm glad you're taking a break for yourself, but I enjoy Rifttober.
Well, it's as much as I love it, like I have so much backlog now. I'm like, I need to finish some songs, man. Like, out of the 90 plus riffs, 120 riffs plus riffs I have from this series of over multiple years, I have like maybe 6 or 7 that I think could actually be really good songs that I have in some sort of form with myself and other people involved. So, you know, I have to finish that before I can go jump back into it. And also it's good to take a break because, and my favorite character of all time, I mean, I'm a simple man. It's Wolverine, but it's also like when I say like my favorite band's Metallica, like I'm not reading Wolverine comics all the time. I'm not listening to Metallica all the time. Like they just earned that spot as my longstanding favorite. Like you mentioned We Three, like the cat's my favorite in We Three. Just for the scene where, you know, they work as a team, you know, that spread that's just ingrained. That was one of the moments where I got that, like literally like got me back in the comics. Like We Three is probably like my one or two all time.
Oh, for sure. I was literally reading it right before I got on the call with you. That's probably why I thought of it.
And like you, I love drawing Cable. He's not exactly my favorite character to read about, but I love drawing him.
No, his stories are usually bad, but he's the best character to draw.
And I aspire, like it's as much, I think we were at a small Chicago show and that 2-issue miniseries, someone had it for like $1. Cause back in our day, it was like, it was super high price, but now it's like $1. Right. I picked that up and I'm like, I think that was all the money I made that day anyway, a few bucks. But I'm like, this is worth it, you know? But as much as I loved J.R. Jr.'s rendition of him, as much as I loved Greg Capullo's rendition of him, my favorite rendition of Cable from a Wolverine issue from the Phalanx Covenant crossover, and it's Adam Kubert drawing him, and he has this ridiculously sized shoulder-mounted gun. And it is, I try to find pictures of it online. For some reason, I cannot find the image of that online. I have to like dig it out of my long box and just like post it online one day, just because it is like perfect cable. Like it is just like so ridiculous, but awesome at the same time.
Adam is a beast, especially when he's like wackier, you know, like when he gets a little loose. And like, some of his stuff on Wolverine is incredible.
Quite a few years ago, I revisited like his whole run Wolverine, and while it was very while it was very like rough in terms of like he obviously had a lot of fill-in issues.
Sure.
He had a couple inkers that really weren't super great with him.
The highs are so high though on those.
God, yeah, like the covers, amazing. The issue before Age of Apocalypse, where it's just the Wolverine Sabretooth fight with all the foldouts and stuff.
Yeah.
One of my favorite issues of all time. Like it's just, you know, I bring that up the time when, I talk about like Wolverine comics and stuff, just because it's just one of the best fights, period.
Oh,
and,
for sure.
You know, it's my argument. You know, it was, I remember talking about it a lot because when the first Wolverine movie came out, you know, a lot of like people I worked with, whatever, like, oh, so he got the medal and then he could finally beat that Sabretooth guy. I'm like, that's not how we fucking beat Sabretooth. He can always beat Sabretooth. It's just he doesn't want to go there. When he goes there, he always kicks his ass.
Yeah.
That's the problem. When he goes there, though, he loses because he gave in. And that's where I get my nerd moments, where it's just like, that
you sound like it must be your favorite character because you have a strong opinion about him. That's great.
Well, I'm glad you got the question. Sometimes these Twitter question ask moments are hit and miss.
Yeah, we're all getting nerfed lately anyway. It's fine. we had plenty to talk about.
I've definitely had episodes where it's like, oh shit, there's so many questions. Like it's going to be the whole episode is going to be these questions. And other times it's like, you know, someone who I would expect to have a lot of questions. And there's like, you know, it's all the timing. It's all the algorithm. It's all the whatever now. Yeah. So, but I'm glad we had that one, 'cause that was a great question. So thank
Absolutely.
You. And, I think I've taken up enough of your time this evening, good sir. So everyone go check out The Schlub. I'll put a link in the show notes. And everyone, if you can let Tyrell, if you can let everyone know where they can find you online, now is the time.
Yeah, please. I am on just two social medias right now, Instagram and Twitter. I am T-Cannon Comics on both of those. I'm also T-Cannon Comics on Patreon. My website is just TyrellCannon.com. It has links to my YouTube channel where I try to do live streams every Tuesday. I'm kind of new to it, so, you know, getting my feet wet. And then I also have a newsletter you can subscribe to. And let me tell you, it's free. You get to hear about all the products and art drops first, all my commission lists, which always fill up from the newsletter first. And you get to hear about little sneak peeks on projects I'm working on, like The Schlub. So sign up for the newsletter if you can as well.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, a ton of great stuff for people to go check out. I recommend you go check out the live streams. I try to catch them when I can.
Yes. Thank you.
You on Tuesdays and Daniel on Fridays. I've been missing Daniel's a lot because his used to be during my dishwashing time, so I could just prop up my phone and hang out.
He does it like during dinner now, like when you and I are cooking. Dan's like, you know, he's doing his broadcast and Rachel's watching the kids. You know,
so. So I'll have to get my own one going. I have to pick a day of the week and get a couple other people, and then we just have every day of the week.
Every day of the week. I like that, man.
We'll get someone to do it. Come on, Tuesdays with Tyrell. It just rolls right off the tongue there, you know?
I can't remember who it was at this moment, but someone actually recommended using that name, and I thought it was so silly and fun, I did it. So
we'll do Mundande or something. I don't know.
Mundande.
anyway, Tyrell, thank you so much for coming on.
All right, thanks a lot, Don. Good talking to you, man.